Well, this morning I wanted to continue looking at the Sermon on the Mount of Jesus, his sermon which begins with the Beatitudes, teaches us to be a noble people. And if there's anything I want for me and the congregation to discover is that we rediscover the noble life. Because in many ways, in popular culture, in the modern world, this idea of the noble life has been erased from our memory. It's been hidden away from us. And Jesus, through the Sermon on the Mount, reveals to us how we can again discover the noble life. Because the modern world knows nothing of nobility. It knows only how to satisfy cheap cravings. It knows only how to inflate egos. And so if we choose the way of the modern world, then we end up looking very foolish. In fact, modernity teaches us that, for example, striptease like pole dancing at halftime shows is the pinnacle of civilization. But Jesus teaches us that the noble life is one of personal strength. It's one of walking nobly in the world. It's one of also awakening others to see this spark of nobility, this spark of God's presence within their own lives, and that they too can live a noble life. So if there's anything, though, that can keep us from experiencing the noble life in Christ, one of those things surely has to be hate. Hate isn't so great. Unchecked anger leads to hate, and that will make a fool of you quicker than anything. Now, we make excuses for our hate. I know we all do that. We might say, I'm only full of hate because I've been harmed by this individual person, or I'm only filled of hate with hate because of this event that took place, or even because of what God did to me in my life. But in maintaining this kind of thinking about our hate, we sell ourselves short. We end up disempowering ourselves. Because when you become overtaken by hate, you lose control of yourself. Or you deny your ability to respond to people or to events or to God with any level of autonomy. So when you let hate take control of your life, you lose control of your life. And how many of us have hate in our hearts? Because most people allow their anger to fester into hate, sometimes uncontrollable hate, and it oftentimes ends in outward violence, most often verbally, but sometimes physically. Or the other option that we sometimes choose, if it's not an outward response to hate, it's an inward response to hate. We internalize our hate for others, and we become resentful, and we become bitter people. So where's your heart this morning? Jesus would ask us. Do you have anger in your heart? And what are you doing with that anger? Are you allowing it to fester into hate? Because one of two things will generally happen with your hate. You will either let it anger. You will let that anger fester into hate that's demonstrated outwardly, where you verbally or physically hurt someone because of that hate. Or you will internalize that hate and you will become resentful, and you will become quietly hateful to others and to yourself. Those are the two things that people generally do with the hate that they have within themselves. But either way, we end up being weak people with that kind of hate because we lose control of our lives. We allow the hate to control us. And if there's one thing that nobility demands of us is that we be in control of our lives, that we be in control of ourselves through God's Spirit leading and guiding and directing us. But hate takes that control away from us. So hate isn't so great. And if it isn't so great, how do we get off the path of hate? Well, that's what Jesus is talking to us about today. And Jesus often does this. He'll introduce a third way. Sometimes Christianity is referred to as the third way. It's not a way of hate. It's not a way of outward hate, and it's not a way of internalizing hate. But Jesus gives us a third option, and we're going to talk about that third option of how to deal with our anger so that it doesn't fester into hate. Jesus introduces this third way to resolve anger. Because generally, in the popular culture, we see two ways of dealing with our anger or our hate. One of those is the Clint Eastwood way. And I just say that, and you kind of know what that means, right? Go ahead and make my day. Settling the score, getting even, or sometimes getting even, then anteing up the response a little bit more. That's one way that in popular culture in the modern world we're told to deal with hate. Of course, then the other one is to play the victim. I don't have to say much more about that either. We see that going on a lot in our society today, where a person is wronged or offended and all of a sudden they play the victim. But inside, they're burning with hate. And they're internalizing that hate because they're resentful to someone who they feel like has made them a victim. But Jesus says those two ways are destructive. For one thing, they take away your autonomy. They take away your control. You're giving control of yourself over to your hate. And that's never a good thing, because hate, as we said, either leads to outward violence or an inward violence. Now, this Clint Eastwood way, this get-even way, this settling-the-score way, it's destructive, and we do see it in movies all the time. You know, kill people, blow things up, set a trap, and watch your enemies squirm. And for some reason, audiences just go in droves to those kind of movies. So that tells you what kind of control that desire, that anger and that hate can have over our lives. Because we actually will pay $15 to go see someone hate someone else and cheer them for doing it. So that's a very powerful impulse that we have, is that outward response to our anger through hate. Modern cinema teaches us that revenge will redeem us. There's an author, Walter Wink, who, I don't know, 30 years ago wrote a book on this whole notion, and he said, our society teaches us something called the myth of redemptive violence, that violence will redeem us. That's the myth that is in our society. And we don't realize how much credence we give to that myth. But we do in so much of how we operate, what we will spend our money on to watch, for example, how much credence we give to this myth that violence is redemptive, that if there is a wrong and we have the bigger gun or the bigger bomb, that we can find justice and we can get even, we can settle the score. But in the Bible, we find this progressive teaching from the Old Testament into the New Testament, so it progresses into how to begin to deal with outward hate. Moses had a first response to it because, and this is the way people naturally respond to an offense, is that you will be offended and then you will seek to get even. But you don't just seek to get even naturally. You want to dig it in a little bit more to them. And then so that escalates and they want to get back to you. And so things can, just the smallest offense can quickly escalate into a terrible ongoing feud over generations even. Maybe that's in your family. You've seen that kind of feud go on because of some offense years ago. And Moses came out, and it's lex talionis is the Latin name given for it. And it's an eye for an eye, the law of revenge. Moses said, no, don't get even and then escalate the situation. He said, just settle the score. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. That was Moses' teaching. Jesus came a couple thousand years later, 1,500 years later, and said, you've heard it said, and he says this in the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, but I say to you, do not resist evil with evil. So Jesus takes it up another notch, and he says it's not about getting even. It's about trying to dissolve the conflict altogether. How can we resolve the conflict so that there's no need for an outward demonstration of revenge or an internalizing of resentment? So we have these two choices that appear before us, settling the score or resentment, but both of them are ignoble paths. And the reason they're ignoble is because we don't get to choose. We give up control to hate in our lives, either by violence or by this inward resentment. So, settling the score and victimhood both result in a disempowered us. We lose autonomy, control over our lives. I already said that. Both lead to personal defeat, and Jesus wants more than anything for us not to be defeated personally. He wants us to have a noble life. So neither revenge nor victimhood lead to happiness. And Jesus wants us to be happy. He does. That's what Beatitudes mean. It means happy. Sometimes there's even translations of the Beatitudes that say, happy are those, blessed are those, happy are those. And if we want happiness in our life, we cannot have festering anger or hate to stay in our hearts. It will lead to unhappiness for our lives. And it's my observation, though, and it's probably yours too, that for many people, anger and hate are the default state of mind, the defining attitude of a lot of people. Maybe a lot of the times those people don't even realize that hate is the defining attitude or the default position of their heart. But Jesus points out something frightening in what Bob read from this morning in our passage, and that is that you may not commit outward murder, but if you have hate in your hearts, you might as well have committed murder. There Jesus goes and gets personal again. He says your hate is just as bad as murder in a very spiritual sense, because it's ruining your life, and it's ruining the life of people around you. It's killing lives spiritually. So until we consciously decide to walk in a constant awareness and an agreement with God who dwells in us, we'll never know happiness. There will always be this low-level noise of anger and bitterness humming in our hearts. And over time, that hum grows louder and louder and louder. And don't kid yourselves, others can hear the hate in your heart, because that hate seeps through. And even at that low level, they can hear it in your words, the words that you use. They can hear it in your tone. They can hear the hate in how you speak to others and how you speak about your future. So Jesus says, if you have that kind of anger and you have that kind of hate and you have that kind of bitterness in you, you don't have to murder anyone to be judged. He says you've already received your judgment because of the condition of your heart. You will be a bitter and a stunted and a miserable person, Jesus is saying to us. And for this reason, Jesus teaches you and me that we have to do something with our anger and with our hate. But first of all, let's say this about anger. Short-term prompting anger can actually be a healthy thing. There are things we should be angry about, right? Because that anger that can drive us to make decisive and fair and virtuous actions to address a wrong or to fix a problem. So the Christian teaching is not that we should never get angry, it's that we should not sin in our anger. That's what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4. But most of us don't utilize anger that way, do we? We don't use anger as a short-term impetus to get us riled up to address a wrong or a problem and right something and fix it and find a solution. Most of us use our anger to let it just sort of simmer there, and then to rekindle that fire, and it gets stronger and stronger, and pretty soon that anger turns into outward hate, or it turns into an inner bitterness. And then Jesus says, well, you might as well just killed at that point, because you're spiritually killing other people around you and you're killing yourself spiritually. That's what Jesus is saying to us. So Jesus says, you got to do something with your anger or you're going to be miserable. Because here's the danger of anger if we don't resolve it. Our problems always escalate if we don't get hold of our anger. Listen to Jesus here in verse 22 of chapter 5. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to counsel. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. Notice the progression there. This is a key point that Jesus is making to us. If a brother or sister wrongs us, so we become angry, Jesus says we don't let that, and if we don't let that wrong go, it escalates so that we get to a point where we will insult a brother or a sister. So someone offends us and we set with that anger and we let it churn and we go home and we just start thinking all these bad things about this person who offended us. And it just boils up to a point that we can't help ourselves but pick up our phone and dial it and insult them. We may not call them and insult them, but we call a neighbor. That's normally what we do, and we insult them. So our anger begins to escalate if we don't do something with it. And Jesus says what will happen is you'll end up insulting, you'll end up escalating the problem. So first, if you become angry and you dwell on it, you bring judgment upon yourself, Jesus says, because it's an inward judgment, this ulcer-generating bitterness that we can have in our stomachs toward others. That's the first judgment, and that's bad enough. But if you choose to insult someone who's offended you, then what happens? He says, then you go to a third party. Then you go to a judge. And if you've ever been in a situation where you had to go to a third party and they were deciding your fate, that's not a comfortable situation. You see where you begin to lose control? So Jesus says, if you insult someone or you harm someone, then it's out of your hands and it goes before a judge. You see how we lose autonomy if we allow our anger to fester into hate and we lose control. And then Jesus says it can even escalate further than that. You can not only insult a brother or sister, where then you have to go before a third party and they get to decide your fate, but you can also get to a part where you get to a place where you call the person who you're angry with and you have hate toward, you can call them a fool. And when you call someone a fool, you dehumanize them. You're basically saying you are not worth living. And so when you dehumanize someone, then you feel justified in doing whatever you feel like is necessary to hurt that person. In fact, you feel like it's necessary and required that you hurt them because they're a fool, they're evil, they're dehumanized. So you can see where anger can build into hate, a personal hate, and then it can grow into offending another, and then it can grow to you where you dehumanize the person who has hurt you. And we have all done that before. We've all entertained fantasies about dehumanizing people and said, oh, if a bomb would just fall on them tomorrow, wouldn't my life be perfect? Oh, you haven't. I'm the only one that's done that. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go to the altar for a moment and get right with that. You see how quickly our anger can escalate from something internally, which is bad enough and eats away at us, to escalate to an offense where we harm someone with words or even with fists, and then it can escalate where we dehumanize the person, and then there's no way to resolve that once the other person is a monster and you're perfect. And so Jesus warns us against how quickly our anger can escalate and begin to destroy lives. That's why he equates anger with murder, because it can get there so quickly and lead to a spiritual death as well. So what's Jesus' solution to dealing with anger? Well, he offers it in the next verse, in verse 23. He says, so when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go and first be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come offer your gift. Couple of points there. Jesus says, first of all, essentially, you cannot worship. You cannot have a worshipful heart. You cannot live a beautiful, noble life before God. You cannot be a gift before God and a gift to others unless you deal with the anger that's festering in your hearts. And so Jesus says, come to terms quickly with your accuser. And notice there he says, your accuser. he turns it on us. He says, sometimes you wrong people. Become aware of that, that we're not perfect, that we harm others, and sometimes we're the ones that need to reconcile ourselves to others. Jesus says, if you don't do that, you will head to the judge. You don't want to go to the judge. You don't want to go to a third party. Whether it's your mom, and my brothers used to do that all the time, mom, and mom would bring down the scepter of justice, and it was never a pleasant thing. You don't want to go to the judge. Here comes the judge. Because you lose your autonomy, and the outcome becomes very unpredictable. So Jesus says, come to terms very quickly with your accuser while you're on the way to court. So even if it's escalated to a point where you think you just can't resolve this, Jesus says, take a step back and reconcile yourselves to one another. Because here's what happens ultimately if you don't. Jesus says, you go to the judge who will render his decision, who will turn you over to the guard, who will put you in prison. And there's the point. Hate is a prison. If you are filled with anger and hate right now, whether it's an internal resentment because of people or events that have happened in your life, and that's all your mind and your heart dwell upon all day long, is that offense. If you have that internally, you are in a prison. If you have an offense, if you have an ongoing a row with a brother or a sister, and you can't resolve that, and that thought about that person and what they've done to you just continually occupies your mind and your heart, you are in prison. And Jesus says, if you call someone a fool, if you dehumanize them, that's the ultimate prison. Because then at that part, you become the evil that you think you hate. And so anger, if not controlled quickly, can fester into hate, and hate will imprison you, and it will imprison me. So Jesus says, if you want to live the noble life, you got to start by controlling your anger. Because that's one of the common emotions in our life that we feel every day, because we are so easily offended. Jesus says, figure out what to do with your anger. Don't go Clint Eastwood. And don't go the route of resentment. Don't outwardly turn violent, verbally or physically. Don't inwardly become resentful where you just internalize all that hate. Jesus says, do all that you can to reconcile your differences. Now, I've tried to reconcile differences with people who I've been at odds with where there was just a refusal to resolve the issue, the practical issue that was at hand. But spiritually, you resolve the issue, though. You may not come to an agreement on the practical issue, but spiritually, you've resolved the issue. I've gone to that person. I have let go of my hate. I have let go of my anger toward them. And spiritually, I've resolved the issue. So now we just got to work out the transaction. Maybe we have to go to the third party and work out the transaction. But spiritually, I am no longer imprisoned to this person or this situation. Do you see how that works? So Jesus is not saying, give up your anger and everything will just work out just fine. The judge will always rule in your favor. You know, everything will be... No, he's saying, release yourself from the spiritual prison of hate. And that will open up a path for you to live the noble life. And Jesus wants the noble life for you. He doesn't want this low-level, lowest common denominator, crass modern living that we have today. He wants us to be lifted up into noble people. And we can't do that unless we have hate, because hate isn't that great. Let's pray together. Oh, Father, how easily we give up control to our anger. We cede autonomy of our life over to hate. And then we find ourselves imprisoned with resentment or with the results of some outward verbal or physical violence that we have committed. And it leads to an ignoble life. But Father, you desire for us beauty. You desire for us excellence, and you desire for us a life of love, a noble life. May we hear the words of your Son Jesus this morning. May we resolve the hate in our lives and be spiritually set free from the prison of hate. And as we do that, we'll give you praise and glory now and forever. Amen.